Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Cameron Baker. I represent appellants Suzanne Porter and Contra Costa County. This case involves two claims, a claim that Ms. Porter, through her conduct, caused a violation of Mr. Suzuki's 14th Amendment rights through the loss of his parental rights to his children. The loss of his rights occurred as a result of three state court orders issued by the state family court judge. The second issue, the second claim is a related Monell claim against the county. There are two issues in this appeal. The first is a materiality causation issue, and the question on that issue is, did Ms. Porter's conduct as a matter of law cause the loss of Mr. Suzuki's parental rights? And the second issue is whether Ms. Porter's entitled to qualified immunity in the context of this particular case. Again, the underlying proceeding was a family court proceeding that involved no government parties. It was initiated by Mr. Suzuki's ex-wife, Roxanne Wilkerson, and only involved Mr. Suzuki and Ms. Wilkerson. I just want to say a brief factual summary. At the time in question, Ms. Porter was a social worker for the county. She was investigating a fourth allegation that Mr. Suzuki had engaged in child abuse. In the course of this, she had contact with Ms. Wilkinson. She's alleged to have coerced Ms. Wilkinson into seeking a domestic violence restraining order. Ms. Wilkinson filed her petition on November 18, 2016. There's no dispute that her declaration in support of her petition contained adequate, non-fabricated evidence to warrant the issue of a domestic violence restraining order under state law. Pursuant to state law, the judge issued that order on the November 18th. There was a continuance of the hearing, so there was a further order issued on December 6th that continued some of the limitations on Mr. Suzuki's rights. And following a full trial, the judge issued a permanent restraining order against Mr. Suzuki. That order was sustained on appeal by the state appellate court. The record should be clear that Ms. Porter did not use any of the fabricated evidence or allegedly fabricated evidence in any investigation report. She did not submit it in a declaration in support of the restraining order. With those two things, I'm going to now turn to the first issue of materiality.
What was the false statement? Was it that he had been arrested or convicted for DUI or something of that nature?
There were two alleged pieces of fabricated evidence that he was had a DUI in 2012, 4 years before, and that he at some point in time had driven the car with his suspended license. Those are the two bits of fabricated evidence.
Okay.
So the first issue is materiality. And again, Mr. Suzuki is claiming his 14th Amendment rights were violated when he lost his rights to his children. Because those rights were adjudicated by a state court and terminated by the state court and limited by the state court, the materiality analysis is conducted as to that state court's decision. That's the holding of this court in Galen versus County of Los Angeles. In this context, the state court is an independent actor and its decision is a superseding cause. The test is one that this court has used frequently. You evaluate the petition, you remove the allegedly fabricated evidence, you then assess whether or not the declaration shown of the fabricated evidence contains sufficient evidence to justify the state court's orders. This court used this very test in Beltran versus Santa Clara County, Hart versus County of Los Angeles, Green versus Camarena, also in the Worley decision we cited, and ironically, also by the district court in this case, on the first order, when she held that Mr. Suzuki could not recover as a matter of law for the impositions issued by the state court in its final and permanent domestic restraining order.
Would you concede, Mr. Baker, that she obtained the first temporary restraining order on the basis of the false information social worker Porter had provided to Ms. Wilkinson?
No. No, I think the evidence is clear that her declaration, I mean, we laid it out in the opening brief, all of the domestic abuse of her, his stalking of her, his abusive treatment of the children, he locked them in the garage, he deprived them of food. Excuse me, I got a phone call. So anyway, the opening brief laid it out. I think we should also be mindful, Your Honor, that Mr. Suzuki does not contest that there was adequate non-fabricated evidence in the record to warrant the issuance of the both temporary restraining orders and both permanent and the permanent restraining order. He has waived that argument by failing to address that issue in his briefs.
Well, so that first, following up on Judge Tallman's question, for that first order that was entered, the material submitted to the judge also included the DUI and the driving with a suspended license information. So what in the record tells us that the judge didn't consider that in issuing the first order?
It's irrelevant whether the judge considered it. Since he's a judge, we can't depose him and say, what did you consider, what did you not consider? And what this court did in Galen, which was a submission of false evidence, supposedly, in a declaration for bail, the court stripped the declaration of the fabricated evidence and made a judicial determination. And this is materiality is a question of law that this court can decide, and decided, was there adequate evidence in the declaration to support the issuance of the order? That's the same analysis this court did in Beltran. Again, it's a decision we cited in the papers. In Hart, another decision we cited in the papers. In Green. So in every situation, the court has evaluated whether it's a state court order that removes parents' rights over his children. They look as to whether or not that order was sustained, sufficiently sustained by the non-fabricated evidence in the record.
I want to follow up on that. Is your argument then that even if the judge, for whatever reason, didn't buy the abuse allegations that were in the affidavit or the application that was submitted, let's just assume for argument, didn't think that those were relevant, didn't think that those were credible, issued this order based on the DUI? So in that scenario, are you saying that just because the abuse allegations were there and we strip out the DUI stuff and he could have accepted the abuse allegations, that just because that he had both sitting there in front of him, that no matter what we do, the judge's order is going to be fine?
Your Honor, that's exactly the standard that has always been applied by this court in this situation. I will say this, though. If you were to approach the angle, if you were to look, and again, I want to emphasize that Mr. Suzuki has waived this argument. There is no, he does not contest this very issue that the court is raising. But I will say this, if you look at it from the other perspective, the two bits of fabricated evidence, as Justice Seiler asked, was there a DUI in 2012? Remember, the restraining order was sought in 2016, November 2016. A DUI in 2012 is not supportive of an allegation of child abuse. Certainly not supportive of an allegation of domestic violence, which is what this is. Again, this is a domestic violence restraining order. I would also say the other bit was driving with a suspended license. Again, that is not material. Courts do not grant restraining orders because someone was driving with a suspended license. Neither one of those are supportive.
Is this essentially a Franks analysis that we would employ in a criminal context, where we look at the affidavit submitted to the magistrate judge, if we excise it and conclude that there is otherwise evidence to support the issuance of the search warrant, that's the end of the inquiry?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Your Honor.
And then the district court in this case seemed to have found that the mere act of applying based on the false information that Porter supplied to Wilkinson was the 1983 violation. Is that, am I understanding correctly what Judge Ilston was thinking?
Judge Ilston said the materiality was sufficient if it showed that the allegations were sufficient if it material, could have been material to Ms. Wilkinson, but that is an incorrect analysis as a matter of law. It disregards what this court said in Galen. It disregarded the fact that only the state court had the authority to restrict Mr. Suzuki's rights. If Your Honor would, you know, if Ms. Wilkinson had sought the restraining order and not been granted it, right, which was a possibility, then there's no violation because his claim is he lost his parental rights. So it had to be as a result of the state court's orders. So it has to be that same analysis that it uses for the false affidavit, but it also does it and uses the same test when it comes to a state court order that limits a parent's rights to his children.
Wouldn't you agree that if a decision, if a court makes a decision based on false evidence, that even if there's other things that the court could have looked at and made its decision based on, if it actually made its decision based on false evidence, doesn't that overcome the presumption of an intervening exercise of judgment?
No, Your Honor. The answer is no. I'm sorry. The cases are very, very clear of how the court does this. And there's no, I mean, we do have, to the extent it's of interest, that the final domestic violence restraining order was issued based solely upon what was called the swimming pool incident. Was an issue where a day when Mr. Suzuki showed up at a swimming pool event, was drunk, harassed his ex-wife in front of the children. He then engaged in further conduct like that in at a party after the swim meet, and the state appellate court affirmed the restraining order simply as to that. Now the standard for
that relates to my first. I'm sorry, I keep coming back to this point, but that relates to my first question. At that point, with that third order, it's clear what the judge was relying on in making the order. But for the earlier ones, is it clear what the judge, what was meaningful to the judge when he issued those first two orders? That's ultimately my question.
Your Honor, because it's a judge, we cannot depose them. We cannot depose a judge and say, Judge, what were you thinking? So I think that the court has done traditionally in the Franks analysis, the court has always looked beyond that and said, we're not going to focus on what the judge did or did not do. We're going to look at whether the supporting affidavit declaration contained adequate non-fabricated evidence to support the thing. And again, I think the record is clear. So state law is very, very tolerant in the issuance of a domestic violence restraining order. All there has to be is conduct that would disturb a person's peace. And again, if Your Honor wants me to go through the record in Ms. Wilkinson's declaration of all the things that she said that he did to his children, I can do that. I think it's abundantly clear that he was abusive towards his children and his ex-wife, and the restraining order was more than warranted. I'm going to turn my... do you have any questions on the qualified immunity argument?
No, I think this case turns for me on the causation question.
All right, well, let me just make one argument on the qualified immunity and make it very quick. No case has ever held that there's a 14th Amendment violation when the case involved purely private actors. In this case, of course, the closest decision is Kostanich, and that case gave no intimation that right would apply in this context, so it was not clearly established. And with that, I'll reserve the remaining part of my time.
Good morning, Your Honor. Todd Docker for appellants, or may it please the court, Todd Docker for appellee Ashok Suzuki. It sounds like the court's major issue, from what Judge Tolman just said, is that is the causation issue. So I'd like to address that at some length. And first of all, I'd like to set out the standard here. Like in Kostanich, which was discussed extensively in the brief, the holding in that case was that you have a right not to be accused based on deliberately falsified evidence that results in the deprivation of protected liberty or property interests. That's the right we're talking about here. That's also a right that's discussed in the Hartwig case, which we also discussed. at some length. And so the question here is, was Mr. Suzuki accused in this case because of Ms. Porter's deception? And the answer to that question is undeniably yes.
Isn't this akin to a malicious prosecution where you have to show, in order to establish the elements of your claim, that the court was actually influenced by the wrongful information supplied?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe this is akin to a malicious prosecution action, because the focus isn't the decision that is affected by Ms. Porter's fabrications isn't the judge's decision so much as it's Ms. Wilkinson's decision. Ms. Wilkinson could have brought a DVRO at any time up into the time that she did, and that she did not do that. The reason she petitioned for the DVRO, and this is right in her petition, is that Ms. Porter told her that she must do it. And so the allegations in our complaint is the reason that she did that is because Ms. Porter told her that Mr. Suzuki was driving under the influence, and that he drove the children on a suspended license, and that Ms. Wilkinson could lose custody of her children if she did not pursue the DVRO.
So is your argument, it's a but-for causation test, but for the fact that Wilkinson sought a restraining order from the Superior Court in Contra Costa County, no such order affecting his parental rights would ever have issued? Is that it?
That is my argument, Your Honor. And none of the cases cited by plaintiffs address that issue. All of those cases address the issue where the government themselves brought the action to the court, and the government made the misrepresentations directly to the court.
But you haven't challenged the issuance of the order itself. You're not challenging the sufficiency of the evidence to support the ultimate ruling, which we know was not based on anything that Porter supplied.
Our argument is, well, let me use an analogy, Your Honor. Let's say that there's a bank, and the bank has a borrower, and the borrower has a loan with the bank, and the bank is entitled to foreclose on this loan, but it doesn't for whatever reason. Could be they have an agreement with the borrower, but they're entitled to foreclose, but they're deciding not to. The government comes in, let's say an SEC regulator who doesn't like the borrower. The government comes in and they lie to the bank about the borrower's character. Not only do they lie to the bank about the borrower's character, but they threaten the bank with SEC action if the bank does not foreclose on the loan to the borrower. The bank at that point forecloses on the loan to the borrower due to the wrongful influence of the government regulator.
But you've got a direct and effect relationship in your hypothetical, and that's what I think is missing for proof in this case. Prove that the false information actually animated the issuing magistrate to enter injunctive relief affecting the parental rights of your client.
But my argument isn't that the issue isn't the issuing magistrate's decision. The point is that the issuing magistrate would never have been called on to make a decision if Ms. Porter hadn't unduly influenced Ms. Wilkinson to bring the action in the first place.
Would you agree that Ms. Wilkinson would have been entitled to seek such a restraining order in the absence of the allegedly fabricated evidence? Based on the abuse, the swimming pool incident, et cetera.
She would have been entitled to seek a domestic violence restraining order, yes, Your Honor. But
that's fatal to your causation element. I think you don't have a prima facie case here of a 1983 violation.
I don't believe that it is, Your Honor, because if that is the case, then we can have the government, as in my bank analogy. The government could strong arm people who have causes of action against a particular disfavored defendant. The government can strong arm those people to bring those causes of action against that defendant. The point here is that Ms. Wilkinson had this ability to bring this DVRO for months, if not years, and she did not do it. The only reason that she brought the DVRO was due to Ms. Porter's wrongful influence.
And it sounds to me like you're asking us to issue a decision that declares that the 1983 violation is complete when the officer supplies false information to Ms. Wilkinson that may or may not have motivated her to go seek a court order. When our cases say that the judge's decision to issue the separation order is the intervening cause or superseding act that defeats causation. I'm just having a hard time reconciling the case law with your position.
Well, the point is, Your Honor, that the case law doesn't address this issue. When the case law talks about the superseding cause, every single case is the government providing the information directly to the judge.
Why does that matter? I'm failing to see the distinction that you're trying to draw there. I mean, there's lots of cases that bring up the example of officers who wrongly arrest someone, and we'll just assume wrongly arrested, not debatable, shouldn't have happened, the arrest shouldn't have happened, and all of that goes away if a prosecutor exercising independent judgment decides to bring a case, or if a judge exercising independent judgment decides to let the case go forward. So undisputed, the officers started the whole thing and shouldn't have, but it lived. So why is it different in your case?
It's different because in that case, for example, the prosecutor decides to bring the case, right? In that case, the question is, was the prosecutor exercising independent judgment? And that's the case in Beck v. City of Upland, which is a 2008 case in this case. And in that case, it says there's a rebuttable presumption that the prosecutor is exercising their independent judgment. And one of the enunciated circumstances in which that presumption can be rebutted is which the prosecutor was pressured by police or given false information. And that pressure and false information caused the prosecutor to bring the action to the judge. So in that case, the focus isn't on the judge. The question is the influence on the prosecutor. And here, the question isn't the influence on the judge. The question is the influence on Ms. Wilkinson. And how much less is Ms. Wilkinson able to resist government influence than a government prosecutor? Here she has false information and pressure, the very sort of evidence that would cause the rebuttable presumption for a prosecutor to be rebutted.
But the system has the protection that you're worried against in that the judge has to approve whether an order gets issued, right? So how do you get around that?
The point is that the only reason the accusation was brought in the first place is due to Ms. Porter's wrongful influence with Ms. Wilkinson. It's just like if a prosecutor decides to bring an action due to false information and undue pressure from the police, and he brings that to the judge, and he wouldn't have without that pressure. That is a case where the court would be, where a Section 1983 Act would lie.
Counsel, how do you get around our decision in Galen versus the County of Los Angeles? There we rejected an argument that where the sheriff's deputies thought that the bail should be enhanced, and we said that's not the violation if you can't link evidence supplied by the deputies to the magistrate increase the bail. And even if the officers acted wrongfully in requesting the enhancement, or in this case Porter acted wrongfully in suggesting Wilkinson go seek an order, it's still an intervening cause here, which is the decision of the magistrate to increase the bail or issue the permanent order. I just don't know how you get around the case law.
But the decision in Galen, which was whether bail of $1 million was excessive or not, and whether the judge was influenced by that is a different question than the question here. The question in Butler, the question in Worley.
I'm looking at the discussion 477 F3rd at about, 6:58, I guess it is, Galen cannot establish that his bail was excessive because there is no evidence of the factors the commissioner considered in enhancing bail or his motive for enhancing bail. And here, there's no evidence that the Superior Court judge relied on the DUI and the operating on a suspended license evidence. Instead, he relied on the pool incident to issue the order.
And Your Honor, I want to bring this back around to Kostinich and Hardwick, in which case you have the right that you have under Section 1983 is not to be accused based on false evidence presented by the government. And in this case, Ms. Porter presented false evidence to Ms. Wilkinson. And the only reason that Mr. Suzuki was accused is because of that false evidence. It's the accusation by Ms. Wilkinson, the accusation that would have not have happened but for Ms. Porter's wrongful influence. That is the issue.
Just take Hardwick for example, wasn't there clear causation where the children were removed pursuant to the juvenile court order triggered by the intentional misrepresentation in the affidavit by the defendant's social worker?
Which case are we talking about here, Your Honor?
Hardwick.
We're talking about, Your Honor, in Hardwick and in Kostinich, you have, and Hardwick is a little light on the facts, to be honest, but in Kostinich especially, you have the Ms. Doran, the government worker, filing a report that contained the wrongful information, and the report encouraged or caused the Department of Health and Human Services in Oregon to pursue a removal of the children from Ms. Kostinich. So it was the fact that she filed the report and the report encouraged the department to move forward with their allegations that was the issue. And again, the issue is the accusation itself. Ms. Wilkinson, Ms. Porter, just stepping back from it a little bit, if Ms. Porter hadn't unduly influenced Ms. Wilkinson, there would have been no decision for Judge Cope to make. How can that not be a cause?
It completely ignores the role of the judge, right? Which is, as Judge Hunsinger reminded you, the protection system affords in weeding out the false evidence.
It's not a matter of the false evidence, Your Honor, and I keep on moving before the judge, Your Honor. It's a matter of this case. The government shouldn't be able to strong arm regular citizens into or the bank, in my example, shouldn't be able to strong arm them to bring even meritorious actions.
But like bail would not have been enhanced in Galen if the sheriff's deputies had not suggested that enhanced bail would be a good idea in order to protect the spouse from the attorney being arrested.
But that is because in Galen, the question was the government bringing the action before the court, and then the government made misrepresentations to the court. So the question in Galen, in Worley, in Butler, and Hart was when the government brought the action,
That there were misrepresentations made to the court in Galen because it was a proof problem. The plaintiff never supplied the district court with evidence of what influenced the bail decision maker. It's the same problem you have. You can't show that the fabricated evidence that Porter gave to Wilkinson influenced the Superior Court judge in separating the father from his children.
Well, again, the question isn't the issue is that the Superior Court judge would never have been called on to exercise his discretion if Ms. Wilkinson hadn't brought the action.
And okay, I understand your argument. I'm just not persuaded by it.
I'm going to exercise presiding judge prerogative. I guess ask one more question. So, So I think I heard you say a minute ago that the constitutional violation you're concerned about is being accused based on false evidence. My understanding from your complaint is that the constitutional violation you're focusing on is the deprivation of his access to his children. So which is it?
Well,
basically, I was looking at paragraph 52 of your complaint.
The accusation caused the deprivation of access to his children. Ms. Wilkinson and Mr.
I get that sort of linking, but ultimately, what is the constitutional violation, you know, the 14th Amendment liberty interest that you're claiming? Is it lack of access to kids, or is it that I was accused when I think I should have been accused?
It was, I don't think those are separable, Your Honor. It was the fact that Ms. Porter caused Ms. Wilkinson to bring this allegation, and that it was that caused Mr. Suzuki's deprivation of a liberty interest.
All right. Unless there's any other questions from the panel. Oh. All right. Thank you, Mr. Thacker.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Baker, you have a minute, a little bit over a minute.
All right. I just want to point out, I think the questions from the court were very thoughtful. I would point out that under Mr. Suzuki's theory, Ms. Porter is worse off if she persuades Ms. Wilkinson to seek a restraining order than if she were to lie to the court herself. Because the test, if she were to lie directly to the court, would be Galen, Beltran, all that stuff, and she would have the protections that Judge Hunziker referenced and that Judge Tallman referenced. I would also point out that that's exactly what the 14th Amendment is about, is whether there was due process in the state court proceedings. She had due process. There was no corruption of the state court proceedings, just like that was at issue at Hardwick. And the last thing I would point out is that the criminal prosecution setting is very different. This court has clearly held that there is a right not to be criminally prosecuted by the government. That's the classic Devereux claim. There's never been a holding that you have a right not to be brought to a domestic violence restraining order in a family court by your ex-wife. And those are my only comments. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel, for your helpful arguments. This case is submitted. And I believe that concludes our calendar for this morning.